Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And it's Monday morning, and that means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. We are live. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can also check us out on Twitter and Facebook.com/NickDShow. Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com to review the movies and talk about the box office. And we are going to take on the box office right now. And let's welcome Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello, Eric.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right. So, no surprise, Furious 7 again, number one at the box office.
Yes.
It's the fifth highest grossing film of all time.
Ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know what to say, man. You know, and I've been a fan of these movies since 2001.
Yeah, needless to say, when I suggested that this was going to pull in Dark Knight-like numbers, similarly because both films lost a star before the film opened.
Yeah,
I guess I underestimated it.
Yeah, well, I think everybody everybody on Earth underestimated how much money this movie was going to make.
Yeah,
it's crazy. $18.2 million dollars this weekend,
mm-hmm.
bringing its total in America to $320.5 million.
Yeah, which looks like piddly compared to what it's done internationally.
It's made over $1 billion.
Yes. It is only the third film in history to make $1 billion outside of the U.S.
What are the other ones?
Avatar and Titanic.
So Jim Cameron must be mad.
Now the only two directors to have movies that make $1 billion outside the U.S., James Cameron and James Wan.
Who would have thought the director of Saw,
right,
would be responsible for one of the biggest films ever in the history of cinema?
Love that. I just love that.
Well, he's a cool guy.
He's very, yes.
He's a very, very cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Furious 7, $18.2 million. What are the other big stories? Tell us about the box office story for the week.
Continuing the Furious 7, trend and whatnot, this is not just the fifth biggest film of all time, not only the third film to make $1 billion internationally, but it's also the biggest film ever to open in China. It's the highest grossing film ever in China.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, they like their movies there.
Apparently.
Well, and also, the Chinese films, there's a lot of them. They make a lot of them every year.
Yeah, they do. And it's funny who's actually kind of taking credit now for the Chinese box office, of all people, if you heard this story this week. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Well, why? Why?
Well, because when he was first getting started, when he was first doing Conan and and whatnot, he was really starting to become a movie star.
Yeah.
The studios, when they were going to promote the films, Schwarzenegger was like to them, let's go all over the place. Let's go to 10 different countries and promote this film. And they're like, whoa, there, Arnie. We're only going to do three countries. We do three countries. We do these three and whatnot. And I was like, oh, we're going to do 10. And so they're like, okay, we'll do 10. And now everybody does all these, the major movies and the major stars go to all of these countries to promote the films. You see Cruise do it all the time. Brad Pitt, makes all these stops and whatnot. So studios learned that the international dollar is there. And, Schwarzenegger's, basically saying, well, this is my suggestion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he personally also then referenced Furious 7.
He referenced Furious 7?
Yes. Saying, see, Look how much money is made in China.
Oh, it's because of him.
Right, of course.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I see. Colin, what were you going to say?
I just said he can take credit for much of anything else these days, so he may as well, you know.
True. <Yeah. laughs>
All right. Well, let's see. The other thing is, Paul Blart comes in second. Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2.
Yeah.
$15.5 million, bringing its total up to $43.9 million. That's much less than the first one made, right?
Yeah. It's probably only going to probably finish about halfway to what the original film did.
Wow. Which,
yeah. The original film made $146 million in the U.S., and this one is, if it's lucky, it's probably headed to somewhere around 75.
Well, it took a long time for them to make this sequel.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one came out, what, 9 years ago?
No. Like 2009, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so not too long.
Okay. Okay, then the year is the number three is The Age of Adeline with $13.3 million. I'm actually surprised that it did that much.
Yeah, it actually outgrossed Furious 7 on Friday. Apparently.
Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a chick flick or whatever. And it just, you know, Fury 7 just, you know, overhauled it, you know, by Saturday. But no, that's not a terrible opening for that movie. But it's, you know, it's neither terrible nor interesting, frankly. It's just kind of middle of the road.
I like that in your box office report, you're like, can you name all the films that Blake Lively is in?
Yeah.
The first one that pops into my head, well, I mean, because I'm a, as you know, I'm a Gossip Girl fan.
Right.
So, I mean, I love her. She's Serena.
Right.
Is the Oliver Stone, the Savages.
Savage is very good.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's probably one a lot of people forget.
Yeah.
You know, and then you got the Traveling Pants movies.
Right. Well, yeah. Obviously. I mean, those, you know, you said put those aside.
Right.
And then what?
Those are the easy ones.
I'm sorry?
Those are the easy ones to remember.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Well, what are the other ones?
Well, Green Lantern.
Oh, that's right. You see.
Yeah. Yes, Green Lantern. Right. The Town.
Oh, my God. That's right. She's good in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said Savages, and she's also in Accepted.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she was the female, the love interest in Accepted with Justin Long.
Now, let me ask you a question. How is it that someone that beautiful is, you forget her movies?
Because then you have to remember her acting.
Because she's, she's a stunning looking woman. And
she's a very beautiful lady, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. I don't know, the first one that popped into my head was Savages. That was the first.
Yeah.
That was the first one. But wow, man, The Town, she was great in that. And that was that's a great movie.
Yeah, great movie.
Okay. All right. The Age of Adeline coming in at number three. Number four is Home. $8.3 million, $153.7 million total. How is that? Is that not? It's underperforming.
No, it's gonna beat the SpongeBob movie, so it's gonna outgross that. So it'll be the number one animated film of the year until the summer. It's kind of a minor hit for DreamWorks.
Okay.
They're certainly happy with the numbers.
All right, number five, Unfriended. $6.2 million, bringing its total, $25.1 million.
That's a big hit for that budget.
Wow, yeah. Man. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Colin loves that movie, too.
I thought for sure that thing was going to be widely ignored. I mean, when I was watching, I was like, this is just one of those little experiments that everyone is just going to have no interest in at all. It's going to be this year's real Cancun. And
Oh, dude! Man! Yeah.
That's man,
I thought for sure that's where it was going. But,
real Cancun.
Right. Wow,
yeah,
that
was like one of those
blasts from the past.
Like, hey, let's see how this goes. Let's see how audiences respond to this kind of movie. And you know, wow, okay, all right, fine. Thanks.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, you know how I feel about it. I actually,
we like it.
I like it.
I know.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, and then number six. Is Exma, how the hell do we pronounce this again?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, $5.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
It's only in, like, how many theaters is it in?
1,200 something, I think. 1,200, 1,300.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a decent chunk of change, and it's so decent actually that I wonder, you know, considering what April has been at the box office, you know, post Furious 7, you know, there really haven't been any sort of major successes. Yeah,
yeah.
So I'm wondering if A24, the studio, kind of missed the boat by just not opening this thing wide. I mean, this thing, you know, you throw this thing on 2,000 screens in this month, you know, that thing probably opens to, you know, at Age of Adeline numbers, at least.
It's sure. Really been
advertised all over the place. I mean, you couldn't, you know, if you were watching Orphan Black, you couldn't miss a trailer for this movie.
Yeah.
So it seems the advertising is certainly out there, and it clearly did its job in the limited amount of theaters. But I always wonder, you know, these platform releases, like, you know, even It Follows, which, you know, the Weinstein Company finally realized if they release something wide, people will come see it. I think that, you know, that and, you know, Ex Machina probably missed, you know, maybe another $10 million or so by not just going wide to start with.
Well, I mean, It Follows is considered a pretty huge success, correct?
Oh, yeah, most certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean when that thing, you know, I think even when people, you know, saw it in Toronto, you know, and they knew that Radius had picked up. Radius, you know, doesn't really release films on a large scale. They're mostly, a lot of their stuff goes VOD or ends up in New York and LA, and then, you know, makes a way to like four or five other major cities, limited release. But It Follows, they saw the sort of the tea leaves on that one. And they open it wide enough for people to see it, and they showed up.
Absolutely. And and by the way, I don't think It Follows has even come on VOD yet.
No, it hasn't.
It hasn't. No. So they've completely bypassed that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Terrific movie, by the way. Really good. Okay, guys, hang on. Colin and Eric are with me, and we are going to talk more movies analyze more of the box office, and then get into the movie reviews right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out with Cochran and the gang. It's Monday morning, which means we do movie reviews, and that's what we're doing right now. Well, we're actually taking a look at the box office, and then we'll take a look at the new movies and so much more. Let's say hello to Colin. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And to Eric. Oh,
hello.
I just lost. I lost Colin.
No.
What the heck? All right, hang on a second. Dan, can we get Colin back? All right. All right, Eric. So the next one on the list was number 7. Is on the top 10. You got Furious 7, Paul Blart, The Age of Adeline, Home, Unfriended, Ex Machina, and then The Longest Ride.
Yeah.
So, $30 million so far.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that the lowest grossing Nicholas Sparks movie?
No, the lowest grossing was The Best of Me last October. So it's past that. But the next two films on the Nicholas Sparks chart are at $41 million, and Longest Ride is going to really have to stretch to make that number.
How many movies have been made by this dude?
10.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We have
Colin? There have been 10 adaptations.
God. All right. Here's Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Sorry, man.
That's all right.
I don't know what happened. We're talking about the fantastic Longest Ride.
Great. I love bull riding. Who doesn't love a good bull ride?
8 seconds.
Yeah.
Luke Perry.
Cowboy.
All right. So number 8 is Get Hard. $3.9 million, bringing his total up to $84 million. Now, how is that in terms of, that's not very successful in terms of either of these guys. I mean, because these two guys are sort of box office big wigs with Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart.
Yeah, most of Ferrell's movies have done over 100, and Kevin Hart has had, I think, well, Ride Along obviously did very well. His last couple ones have been more in the $50, $60 million range, so it's sort of, they kind of split the difference on here. I don't know if Kevin Hart's dragging Will Ferrell down a little bit, but, I mean, it's going to make more than the campaign did.
Yeah.
But it's budget-wise, this movie still needs about another $50 million worldwide to break even.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. They spent that much money on it?
It was like, the budget was only like $40 million, and then they spent another like $25, $30 on, you know, prints and advertising and stuff. So, you know, that adds up.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, number nine, Monkey Kingdom, $3.5 million, bringing its total up to 10.2. These Disney nature movies, there is a box office for it, correct? There is an audience for it.
Yeah, but it seems to be waning a little bit. Right now, this is the lowest grossing one of the bunch, and it might pass African Cats. We all remember African Cats, don't we?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And you know, that one did just over $15 million. So Monkey Kingdom might pass that, but it seems to be waning. But they already got there's one coming out next year. I forget the title of it, but there's another one coming out next April. So they're not giving up yet.
Okay, all right. And then number 10 is Woman in Gold. Again, with $3.5 million, bringing its total up to $21.6 million, which is actually, you know, that's actually pretty good for that movie, correct?
Not bad, yeah. Weinstein, again, ended up, you know, they platformed it for a week, and then they released it. And what do you know, people who, I guess, didn't go see Second Best Exotic Hotel, Marigold Hotel, you know, showed up to this.
Okay.
So...
And then you were talking about in the box office, you 30 films that were released in April that feature a woman in the leading role because of the Age of Adeline did 13.3.
Yeah.
So you nailed some of these down.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with something to make those numbers look more interesting than they actually were,
yeah,
and I don't think I succeeded.
Well, you had Scary Movie 4. Now, does that really? I mean, is that really? Well, yeah, I guess the lead is a woman. Anna Faris, right?
Yeah, I initially kept it off the list, but I'm just like, well, if I'm going to do in this list, then I suppose I should include every movie that actually stars a female.
Okay, Nightmare on Elm Street 2010.
Yeah.
Which opened? Boy, that opened with $32 million.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, Hannah Montana the movie. Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married to Evil Dead, God bless it. featuring, I think, one of the greatest female horror performances of all time in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kill Bill Volume 2. That opened in April?
Yeah. Yeah, first one opened in October.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Then The Other Woman. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Girls, God bless it.
Mm-hmm.
$24.4 million. The Lucky One.
Nicholas Sparks.
13 going on 30. Man, not a lot of good movies here.
No.
Prom Night. Indecent Proposal, which actually I think is a good movie. $18.3 million. Baby Mama, another movie I think is good. Water for Elephants. Actually, I like that movie too. The Last Song, is that a Sparks movie?
Yes, it is.
Just doesn't end, does it?
Nope.
City of Angels. I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I thought that was a good movie. Colin, did you enjoy that movie?
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, well, I like it. I mean, I didn't expect, you know, Meg Ryan to get smashed by a car.
Well, nobody ever expects that.
No. And then The Age of Adeline comes in. And The Longest Ride is underneath that. Okay.
Right.
All right. All right. Well, that's a look at the box office. We've got, hey, by the way, we've got some Chicago Critics Film Festival stuff to give away. Tell everybody what we're going to be giving away, Eric.
Actually, let's bring in Dan if he's there.
Is here. Dan, explain. We're going to give each morning. We're going to be giving away 5 pairs of tickets to a specific night to go to the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
Right. Both Colin and Eric were very generous. So each show this week, we will be giving away 5 pairs of tickets to a specific screening. And then our big culmination at the end of the week is a full pass to every screening at the festival. So, for example, later this show, we'll be giving away 5 pairs of tickets to see Raiders, which will debut this Friday, May 1st at 9:30 at the film festival. And then we'll keep going every night. We'll give away 5 pairs of tickets to people. And then, as we said, at the end, we'll give the big, full, everything included pass. Thanks to Eric and Colin.
That's great, man. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, Eric, we're going to be giving away, this will be a little bit later on, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We'll open up the phone lines and we'll give away 5 pairs of tickets to see Raiders. Eric, tell everybody about Raiders.
Well, Raiders, it's a documentary, and it's a documentary about the 3 kids from 1982 to 1989 actually set out, using, all means of their disposal to recreate Raiders of the Lost Ark shot for shot. There were such fans of the movie, and this thing sort of became an underground phenomenon. Actually, over a decade later, actually people were sort of aware of it, but then it finally got unleashed to people in Austin, Texas, and so these kids sort of became underground cult celebrities in a way. And this documentary, while it focuses on that aspect and it focuses on the making, their trials and tribulations of making this thing when they were kids, the film then actually jumps ahead, and we catch up to where all these kids are now, and they find themselves reunited and creating a Kickstarter fund to recreate the one scene that they didn't get to finish as kids, and that is the immortal plane fight sequence.
Right.
And they actually, so the movie, it jumps back and forth in time, and we actually see them actually getting the money together to recreate this scene. So it's a movie about filmmaking and growing up and responsibility. The love that you have as a kid is not quite the same as the love that you have as an adult.
Right.
When responsibilities come into play. It's a really sort of fascinating documentary, and I'm telling you, the last 15 minutes of this movie will just knock you out of your seat.
Yeah. Now, Colin, you've seen this, right?
Yeah, it's really terrific. I echo everything Eric said, and people get lucky and get a ticket to this thing. I mean, they're not going to be disappointed when they come out. I mean, people should come out anyway and pay money for it, but I mean, this is a good prize, is what I'm getting at.
Okay, cool.
Well, we want to get this. Yeah.
5 pairs of tickets to Raiders, which will be screening Friday at 9:30 p.m. at the Music Box. And by the way, that's where it's all taking place, the Chicago Critics Film Festival, all at the Music Box. All right, guys, hang on. When we come back, we're going to review some movies, okay? Hang on.
Okay.
All right. So, there you go. Nick DiGilio here. Hi. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out with the Cochran Bunch after 5. It's Monday morning, and that means, by the way, my dad calls in because it's a jokey time. That'll be coming up in the 4:45-ish break. But right now, Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me to review the new movies. Colin!
Yeah.
Hey, man, why don't you tell us about The Water Diviner?
All right. well, this is a film directed by Russell Crowe and starring Russell Crowe. And it takes place in Australia after the Battle of Gallipoli, 1915.
Which, by the way, Gallipoli?
Great movie.
Fantastic movie.
Oh, yeah. Peter Weir.
Oh, my God. And the ending of that movie? Good
yeah.
God. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
That's good. No, that's let's talk about that instead. Please.
No, go ahead. We got to review the new one.
Yeah, you're right. We should do that.
All right. So Crow, farmer, and yes, a water diviner, and he has three sons, all of whom went to fight in this war. None of them came home. They're presumed dead, but it's been 4 years, Crow's his wife wonders, you know, how he can find water underground, but he can't find his kids. Well, after another tragedy, he finally decides he's got to do what he can to find out what happened to his three sons. So he travels to Turkey to do some investigating. He stays in a B&B run by, you know, Turkish family, and there's kind of a language barrier there. And he begins to fall for the woman who runs the place, played by Olga Kurylenko. And he sort of love interest there, and he becomes a father figure to her son and so on. And he does begin to learn the whereabouts of his three sons, and the film flashes back to their time during the war and what led to, you know, their demise or whereabouts or whatever. So this is Russell Crowe's feature directorial debut, and you know, one would think, given his choice of roles over the last 20 years or so and the directors that he's worked with, that he would have the instinct to go with something, you know, very cerebral and less emotionally driven in the material that he would choose. But instead, the water diviner is as manipulative and sometimes schmaltzy as a film can get. He's using, you know, a lot of old techniques to try and make up for all the shortcomings in the script. You know, it's like just all this narrative stuff. It's a really incompetent screenplay. It never explains why it took 4 years for him to finally get out there and investigate what happened to his kids. His relationship with Olga Kurylenko is condensed to a montage of them eating dinner by candlelight, but we never hear what they're talking about or what their connection is, really. So it's a very unconvincing leap to suddenly, you know, them being in a relationship. It's like Russell Crowe is channeling his inner Nicholas Sparks and his inner late 90s Miramax kind of thing.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It's that kind of, it's like the Captain Corelli kind of
thing.
it's a movie that wants to be an anti-war film, but kind of revels in the action at the end of the film to make sort of a rousing adventure. So that doesn't work. There's so little that works here, and it's a big part of it is the script, which fails to put so much into context so that we'll care about when something tragic happens. Instead, you know, Crow just was gonna—he's gonna crank up the music. I mean, the music is, you know, turned up to 11 in this thing, and so it's part of it is the script, and part of it is Crow's ham-fisted direction and trying way too hard to be a crowd pleaser. You know, and really going for the Oscar. I mean, this is, it's only, it's playing a very limited release. It's almost an art house platform release, but it is not very art housey at all. It's really firing on all cylinders to try and be a crowd pleaser, but it just doesn't work.
Okay.
All right. Well, I didn't see it, and Eric, you didn't see it either.
No.
Yeah. And after this review, I don't think I'm going to.
No, go watch Gallipoli instead.
Yeah, man, I haven't seen Gallipoli in a long time.
Oh, I just watched it a few months ago. It's so good.
It's so good. So good. I remember the first time I saw it, I completely freaked out at the end. Like, I freaked out. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It was so good. Amazing. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I've got a couple of movies that I've seen that you guys haven't seen. So we're going to review those coming up in just a minute. You guys have not seen The Wrecking Crew?
No.
Nope.
Okay, and you didn't see The Age of Adeline?
No.
Nope.
Okay, Well, that was, you know, I mean, you know, I had to see that because Serena's in it. So I, you know, that was necessary for me.
The girl from Savages?
The girl from Savages. That's right. All right, you guys, hang on, all right? Take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we got more movies to review right here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio. Monday morning movie reviews continue right after this. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower here until 5 a.m., and then we'll hang out with the Steve Cochran gang on 720 WGN. It's Monday. And so that means that we review the movies on Monday morning. So we had the director of The Wrecking Crew on our on the show. It was Denny Tedesco is the director. And we had him on back in May, almost a year ago.
Mm.
And it was just coming out. And I had seen it. And I thought it was... I think it's a terrific movie. The Wrecking Crew basically is this documentary about these incredible musicians who have backed up the likes of the Beach Boys and Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby. It's incredible. And it's a really great music documentary, and they did a terrific job bringing it to life, and the accomplishments. I mean, they backed up the Byrds, they backed up Sonny and Cher, they backed up Elvis, and these are guys that you got these session, musicians who are just like they're just working guys. They go from session to session to session. And some of them happen to be like extraordinary and have worked with an amazing amount of people. And so this documentary that Danny Tedesco directed is about this certain group of guys who have extraordinarily worked on great stuff. So it's a terrific movie.
Sounds like 20 Feet from Stardom for session musicians.
That's exactly what it is. Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it works in the same way that movie worked. So The Wrecking Crew is playing. Where is it playing? Is it the Music Box?
Yes.
Yeah, it's at the Music Box. So I would highly suggest that people go and see it. If you're a music fan, you really, really need to see this movie. It's a terrific music documentary, and I'm glad that it actually got a release, because when I was talking to the director, almost a year ago, it was going to do some of the festival circuit, but they didn't know whether it was going to get a release or not. But it's out. It's at the Music Box, and it's definitely worth seeing. It is a terrific music documentary.
I'm seeing no listing of it at the Music Box right now. Was it just a matinee thing, or?
Wow.
I don't see it.
I saw the ad in the paper on Friday.
I'm sorry, so I think it's the Landmark.
Oh, at Landmark?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, well, let me see.
I have a listing at the Landmark.
It is at the Landmark, that's where it is. It's at the Landmark, okay. Well, the Landmark at Clark and Diversey, go see it, because it is a really terrific movie. If you're a music fan, definitely. Yeah, it is. It's at the Landmark, and that's where you got to see it. So check it out. All right, Eric, tell us about Adult Beginners. This is here's the thing about the poster image for this.
Yeah.
Because Joel McHale's in it.
Yes.
Okay, so you watch Community?
Yeah, I have not seen any of the new Yahoo episodes though. No,
but you watch it?
Of course.
So okay, all right. So you're aware of the way Jeff acts, his character acts.
Yes.
All right. Have you seen the poster?
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. Look at Joel McHale.
Yeah.
All right. So is he Jeff?
He might as well be.
I mean, it's like the first time I saw the poster for this, I just was like, all right, so he's texting.
Yeah.
He's clearly, it's Jeff.
Yeah, he's somewhere probably in this movie. And I actually had to look at the poster to remember that he was even in it, frankly.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, I just because I focus on the other three actors, because he's got kind of a really small role compared to the other three actors.
Okay.
But he's somewhere between, you know, him on Community and him and Ted in this movie.
All right.
So.
Okay, well, let's tell us about Adult Beginners.
Yeah, okay. Well, this one stars Nick Kroll, comedian Nick Kroll, and he is at the beginning of the movie, is sort of this entrepreneur, almost kind of just, you know, selling this product, and he's got a lot of investors and whatnot, and things are really looking up for him. And then on the eve of this big launch of this company that he's put together, the bottom just completely drops out, and he loses a lot of people, a lot of money, and then basically he's sort of alone in the world with no prospects or anything. And he's been this sort of guy that has, you know, sort of looked for the shortcuts all his life in a way, and when the one that looked like it was going to come through for him doesn't, he sort of goes into despair and actually goes back home for a momentary visit with his sister, played by Rose Byrne. She's pregnant. And her husband is played by Bobby Cannavale, the great Bobby Cannavale.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he should just be in everything. He's that's the level. I love this guy, and he's great in everything, and he's great in this. Recognizing his situation, even though they've sort of been estranged for some time, she offers him a place to stay in exchange to basically sort of be a nanny to her young son. It's maybe not the wisest move on her part, but he takes her up on this. And so you have the brother and sister sort of getting reconnecting once again, getting to know each other, and also her husband now has sort of a male friend that he can hang around and to reveal his feelings and get high with and all these other sort of things as a confidant. The movie sort of strikes a familiar tone in a way. You probably not forget last year's The Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig. There's a lot of sort of echoes in the relationship between these two characters. They don't have any great lip-syncing moments like they did in that movie, but the relationship is relatively believable, and it mostly works. I think the film sort of mostly works, and it mostly works because of the performances. I'm not a huge fan of Nick Kroll's comedy. I don't really watch the Kroll Show. And I haven't really responded a lot to a lot of things that I've seen him in before. But he's pretty decent here. Playing a bit more of a dramatic role, as well as sort of the inner goofball that he is at time to time. I already mentioned Bobby Cannavale, who just, you know, in every scene he's in brings just something wonderful to the movie. Really funny, really human. And Rose Byrne is another person who I'm just at the point where I just kind of want to see in everything. I really, really kind of in love with her. I think she's really funny, really sort of brightens up any movie that she's involved with. And this is not a great movie by any stretch, but it's one worth taking a look at if you like these actors, and that's the strength of the movie, the interaction between these guys. Joel McHale, again, does pop up here and there and offers a little bit of humor. But it's the strength of these performances that make this one worth taking a look at. So I'm recommending it.
All right, cool. Very, very cool. It is out in theaters, but it's also on VOD.
Yes.
So you can watch it in your home if you choose to do so. I'm not familiar with the director of this
Yeah, it's interesting. The director's name is Ross Katz, and the only film he had done previously was a film called Taking Chance, which was an HBO movie with Kevin Bacon.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie.
Yeah, yeah. So it's sort of a different leap for him here, but clearly he works with good actors, and that certainly helps him along. But no, I think he's doing just fine.
I'm looking at his credits, and as a producer,
he's got some credits.
He's got some credits, man. I mean, he's Marie Antoinette, Lost in Translation, In the Bedroom.
Yeah,
the producer on that. I mean, so this guy's worked on some pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. That's there you go. All right. Adult Beginners is the film, and we're going to take a quick break here, you guys, and we'll come back and we'll. I got one more movie to review for you guys, and then we're going to talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. Got Chicago Critics Film Festival tickets to give away as well. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trip Tower. Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me every week to review the movies. You can read them at efilmcritic.com and rogerebert.com. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So before we get to the Chicago Critics Film Festival, you guys can tell us about the schedule, and we've got some tickets to give away as well. But let me tell you guys about The Age of Adeline, which you guys didn't see.
Nope.
Come on, man.
Sorry.
I'm trying to run a film festival. I don't have time for Blake Lively.
You have to make time for Blake Lively.
Yeah, she's the Jell-O of actresses, Colin.
She rules. And she's in the potato chip sketch.
You mean on
SNL?
That's right.
She will always be in the potato chip sketch in SNL. That's, you know. All right.
Colin, what were you saying there?
I said, you said she's the Jell-O of actresses. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you said there's always room for her.
Oh, I thought you meant I'm going to leave her in the fridge and forget she's
there's
there.
There's always room. There's always room for her.
Okay.
All right. So here's the deal. You guys know the plot of this movie. She is this woman who has an accident. It changes her life. And this is at the beginning of the 20th century. And she remains 29 years old for like 8 decades. And that's essentially what the plot is. And there's like romance and all kinds of stuff in there. And Harrison Ford's in it.
And then Sean Connery shows up and teaches her how to swordplay.
There can be only one. I got to tell you, I didn't expect much from this movie. The only reason I went to see it is because Blake Lively's in it. I actually liked it. I thought it was charming, and I thought it was sweet, and I thought it was emotional. And I really got into it. I was invested in it, and I found it to be very, very, very gratifying at the end. Harrison Ford is not grumpy, which I always think is a good thing because Harrison Ford is so grumpy all the time now.
Well, not anymore.
No, well, yeah, not anymore.
He's home.
Sorry?
He's home now.
Yeah.
According to the trailer.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah. You know, the one thing that I was telling Dan about this when we were coming in or going, I don't remember. We were in the car at some point. Dan and I were in the car, and I was talking about the Star Wars trailer, and I said that I was very relieved that Han doesn't have an earring.
Mm. That's a good call. That's a good call right there.
It's like, anyway, The Age of Adeline, I liked it. I thought it was good. I think it's a good romantic movie, and I thought the performances were very good in it, and I'm a big Blake Lively fan, so there you go. All right. Let's talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, guys. And what are we looking forward to? Friday it starts.
Yeah, Friday we kick this thing off, our third annual film festival at the Music Box. And people want to go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com. On the front page now, you can see a breakdown of all of the guest appearances we're going to have throughout the week. Okay. It's so many guests that it needed its own poster. And the lineup if you want to interact with directors, we have 11 directors who are going to be there, including Ryan Oliver, Chicago.
Yeah, my buddy Ryan Oliver.
Yeah, not just Ryan Oliver, but both Joe and Chris Swanberg will be there. Chicago is very well represented in this festival. And then, you know, we have stars like Kobe Smulders. On the weekend that the Avengers opens, we're going to have Maria Hill is going to be here at the festival on Saturday. And she's, in some ways, the opening act to Bobcat Goldthwait, who will be making a return appearance to the festival. Colin, what are some of the other standouts that you kind of want people to see at the fest, besides your shorts, of course?
The short films, Ryan Oliver's bit at the his short film at midnight on that opening night is going to be spectacular, I'm sure. I was at Ebert Fest last week, and I saw the end of the tour, which I know you've talked about with the movie with Jason Segel.
I actually haven't talked about it. I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, my gosh. I thought you'd seen it.
No.
Or something. Oh,
I'm the only
gosh.
One that
wow.
hasn't seen it.
Oh, man.
I can't wait.
It's one of the best films of the year. Definitely one of our best films. It's the one where Jason Segel plays David Foster Wallace. And it's about his book tour. And Jesse Eisenberg plays Rolling Stone reporter who's following him on this tour. And they kind of develop a friendship along the way. Joan Cusack is again, Chicago being well represented in this festival. And directed by James Ponsoldt, who directed The Spectacular Now and Smashed, who is forging a great career for himself. And this is, I would be shocked if this thing didn't get nominated for Best Screenplay next year. I think this is just a really wonderful movie. This is definitely, James Ponsoldt is going to be there for the Q&A, so that's going to be great. He's, you know, such a great guy to, you know, just hang out with and to be around. He was at our festival and when we first started with The Spectacular Now, and he loves coming back. So we're excited to have him back, and this is definitely one you want to go to.
Awesome.
Yeah, and Colin last week mentioned The Bat Kid Begins. Which I seriously might, you know, induce tears about as quickly as Up does. And like Colin mentioned, tears of joy in a way. But that's going to be Sunday night at 7:30 with director Dana Nachman and Kurt Keene, who did Dear Zachary. He is going to be there. He's the writer and editor on the film. There's so many great things. You're going to be giving away tickets to a specified screening every night for the rest of the week.
Yeah.
And then the giving away of the full pass. Our closing night lineup is really quite special. We're showing a film called The Overnight, which is a hilarious comedy with Adam Scott and Jason Schwartzman.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for it. Schwartzman looks like he's hilarious in it.
It's the funniest performance Schwartzman has had done in years. I mean, seriously, like up there, like one of the best performances he's given since Rushmore, easily, like original and funny and touching and just terrific in this movie. This movie's really funny. And then we're closing with one of, if not my favorite film of the year so far, the big Sundance hit, Me and Earl and the Dying Girl, which is, I think, easily the best film made about teenagers since The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I put it up on that pedestal.
Wow.
So just closing night alone, you know, if you can't make it any other nights, closing night is really, you can't get a much better double feature than that.
Each show this week, we are giving away five pairs of tickets to a specific screening. And this morning, we are giving away tickets to Raiders, which is Friday, May 1st at 9:30 p.m., and we have five pairs to give away. And, Dan, why don't we open up the phone lines now? Let's say callers 5 through 10. All right, callers 5 through 10 at 312-981-7200 on our regular phone line, 312-981-7200. The first, 5 through 10 who get through will get a pair of tickets to see the Sunday night screening of or I'm sorry, the Friday night screening of Raiders. So that's a part of the fantastic Chicago Critics Film Festival, and we'll be giving away tickets all week. So right now, callers 5 through 10, 312-981-7200. All right, guys. What do we got next week?
Well, besides the Chicago Critics Film Festival?
Yeah. There's another little movie that opens next week.
Yeah, and it's called Avengers Age of Ultron.
What?
And I know people, you know, might think it might be gone after a week. You know, they might think, like, I'm not going to the festival. That movie's going to be gone. Well, no, I think it's going to be around for maybe a second week.
It'll be around.
They might hold it over.
Yeah.
Come see our film festival, see what we got, and then go see the Avengers.
All
come
right.
Meet Colby Smulders.
So the Avengers opens Friday, and we'll review that, but we will also cover the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and we've also got a lot of tickets to give away. 5 pairs each this morning and the next morning and the next morning and the next morning after that.
Yeah, all right. I'd love to hear some people from the festival actually call into your show just to review some of the movies, if you will. I'd love to hear what they have to say.
That's cool.
About our lineup.
All right. Right on, man. All right, you guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds
all
good.
All right, take care. There's Colin. There's Eric. All right, we'll take a break right here on 720 WGN.